Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com and please tell us where you're from. This is episode 166. If you'd like to see the show notes for this episode, you can go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab at the top of the page and look for episode 166, where we will put in everything that we promised to put in, but we don't know what it's going to be yet. So it's always a mystery to us because we'll get through the questions and find out what we're going to link to. Good morning, Casey.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm settling in.
Well, yeah, we just had a little minor cat problem. Cat injury. There's always a pet thing.
I'm just happy to say
there's no pet thing in this house right now. So we have to get this episode cranked out before a pet thing starts. But no, the puppy is 4 weeks old yesterday, and she is already 100 times easier than LB was at this age. And I think, she just acts a lot older than he did at this age. So I'm thinking that we're going to have a fine time recording. She's
good.
Just asleep, and if she wakes up, I don't have to worry about her like tearing a hole in the furniture or anything. She's just kind of good.
Good. Girls mature faster.
I think it has more to do with the breed. It might have something to do with the fact that she's a girl, but just Basenjis are just kind of relentless, and I don't know why they're so destructive, but
they're so smart.
They're so smart and they're so curious, and maybe Elby just wanted to see what it was like on the inside of the sofa. I don't know, but I can trust her. Also, something that's different is every kind of fuzzy toy that Elby had when he was a puppy, he completely destroyed. Took out the squeaky, and it was within 5 minutes of having this fuzzy toy, he would have it totally dismantled into 100 pieces. She doesn't destroy anything. She just likes her toys. She just like squeaks them and carries them around. And, you know, I don't know. I've never had a Whippet before. I've only had Basenjis. And so the fact that she's good is still very weird to me. I'll get used to it.
Yeah.
You had a good weekend?
I was going to say, that's what it would be like for me if I suddenly had some really like well-behaved, quiet child.
That's exactly what it's like.
Who just wants to sit in the corner and color.
Yes. Well, I was just talking over you, but asking if you had a nice weekend, but you had one kid this weekend because your husband was out camping with the other one.
Yeah. And then I went to the Texas Book Festival for a little bit. And
oh, that's right. Yeah.
I saw Malcolm Gladwell, which was super cool. And then we went to see Joker, which was horrifying. And so it was a good weekend.
I just finished a book by Malcolm Gladwell that I really enjoyed. He reads his own audiobooks. Great for knitting.
Which one? Talking to Strangers?
No, it was the one before that. I haven't read that one yet, but I want to.
So this one, Talking to Strangers, he did the audio in the style of a podcast. And so they have like the actual interviews with people and different voices and sounds like you would in a podcast instead of just him reading it. And he said the audio is outselling the book, which is not normally how book sales go.
No, so, I wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
That is really cool. I've listened to a book. I think it was actually an Audible original that was released. So it sounded like a podcast, like they would exactly like you just described, cut into an interview. And instead of having the author read the quotes, you would actually hear it from the person.
Yeah.
It's really nice format. I thought it was really nice. And so he does a really good job. I can't think of what was the book I just read. We'll have to look it up because it's his last book.
Yeah.
Not this newest one, but the one before. And he reads the audio. You probably do have it right there. Did you get a signed book from him?
We got a signed piece of paper that we can stick in our book. Which was weird.
That's all right, though.
I guess I don't know. I guess he could do that a lot easier. He could sign a bunch of stickers and then send them back versus having to sign all the books.
Right.
He wrote David and Goliath. Is that what you listened
to?
Nope. What the Dog Saw?
Yes. And then also another one, something about a thin line or something.
There's Outliers, Blink, and The Tipping Point.
I read What the Dog Saw and Outliers. Outliers was so good.
Okay. Yeah, I read that
one. No, I want to read the new one. I have to read this. I have to finish this book, this audiobook that I'm listening to now about how the internet is ruining our brains.
We are listening to the nerdiest stuff. Here, I'm listening to the psychopath test.
That's right. We both do listen to fiction too.
Yeah, but we're always just listening to different stuff. So
I don't think you have to explain to knitters, apologize for nerdy stuff, because no. We're all nerding out on knitting anyway, right?
That's
and
true.
It's mathy.
And I do want to, while we're nerding out, if you are looking for a new podcast, the podcast about Dolly Parton is really good.
Oh, yes. Yes. And that's not nerdy.
No.
Go ahead.
Dolly Parton's America.
Right. Dolly Parton's America. I just finished the second episode, and now I'm waiting for every episode to come out. Even if Dolly Parton isn't your favorite thing, you will fall in love with her by listening to this.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so well done.
And it's just such an interesting, like, she's such an interesting person, like, historically, how her career moved through time. I mean, it's just fascinating. So
it is fascinating. And it's put out by a public radio station.
It's the same people who do Radiolab.
Yeah.
I think it's WBUR? I can't remember which one, but Radiolab is one of my first podcasts that I really fell in love
yes.
with. So
I think it's one of the first podcasts that a lot of us started listening to, just because it was one of the first well-produced podcasts out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is really good. Dolly Parton's America. Totally worth a listen. Yes.
Yep.
But there's only two episodes out, so you have to wait with the rest of us. I think there are going to be 9 episodes total.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, we can actually magically turn some knitting questions into knitting answers. I think okay. we have a follow-up to start with.
Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. This is Lisa. I'd written in previously asking about sharpening dull points on wood or bamboo needles, and you were gracious enough to answer my question on the air. I wanted to follow up and let you know I made the leap and sanded some of my bamboo needles. I bought 2 very fine grit sandpapers and used the lower number one to sharpen or deblunt the point to my liking, and then used the higher number one to smooth it out. You were right that sanding does remove finish, but it solved my problem by grabbing some wax. But I solved the problem by grabbing some waxed paper from the kitchen and rubbing the needles and tips down. It's not as smooth as brand new, but pretty darn close, and it's worth it to have the needles that no longer drive me crazy. Love the podcast and you both. Stacy, with your help, I'm now rocking Kitchener Stitch. Thank you, Lisa from Rousel, Illinois.
Lisa, I'm glad you found a solution. I would be afraid to start sanding down my needles. Well, yeah. if something was totally ruined, I might sand it down in an effort to save it. But I don't think I'd try to change like a sharp needle to a blunt needle. But that's brave, and I'm glad it worked out. And the wax paper tip is also pretty handy.
Yeah, the wax paper is smart. You might also try some little oil or something. Like if you have some oil to wipe down your tables, that might soak in.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But
wood
smart.
Oil.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Hello, Stacey and Casey. I severely enjoy listening to your podcast and watching all your videos. You do amazing, amazing work, and you have a wonderful library of knowledge. Now to my question. I just finished knitting the free leaving cowl pattern by Maria Magnuson, found on Ravelry. I noticed that my traditional long tail cast on edge is not matching the same tension as my traditional yarn over bind off edge. The cast on is more uniform and the bind off is more loose. I get the ripple effect. When knitting a tubular cowl, how do you recommend using the 2 cast on bind off methods together? Or I'm sorry, would you recommend using these 2 together, or would you recommend 2 other methods? Thanks again, Nancy from Savage, Minnesota. Don't you know?
Don't you know? Nancy, yes, you have used a really stiff bind off and a really stretchy stiff cast on, sturdy stiff cast on, and a really loose, stretchy bind off. And so those 2 aren't going to match. First thing I would say is find out from the designer what cast on and bind off she used, because I can tell you how to match these things up, but I don't know what is going to be best for your project, because like a 2x2 rib cowl might need something stretchier, something that has some color work in it might need something sturdier. I just don't know because I'm not familiar with the pattern, but I'm pretty sure that Casey's looking up this pattern right now.
I am. I'm having a hard time finding it, actually.
So with a long tail cast on, I would use a traditional bind off, regular old, nothing fancy bind off. If you want to do something stretchier, I would use a German twisted cast on and the simple stretchy bind off. Those two match up pretty well. And I can link to all of these in the show notes so you have them in front of you. Just with the long tail cast on, it can either be long tail or knitted. I know people, I mean, they're pretty much interchangeable. They're both good, sturdy cast ons. But that's how I would match those up. But really, different patterns need different things. And the designer should be clear about what is going to work best in that pattern. What have you found, Casey?
Yeah, it's pretty. It's a cowl, like just a short cowl, and it has like seed stitch on either end and at like a leaf lace pattern.
Okay.
So that's all.
I'm still not sure which one would be best. I would ask the designer, and then since she already finished the cowl and she's done the bind off, I would just undo the stretchy bind off and just go with a regular bind off. I can't think of what I was going to say. A regular bind off.
Okay. And I mean, it's kind of one of those galloping horse things where the way you wear it, you might not notice that much.
That's true.
But okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. Love your podcast and websites, etc. I am officially the knitting geek in my family as my kids just roll their eyes at me because I get so excited on Wednesday and Thursday.
I have a question. That's funny. This is like the geek out episode. We'll have to make that the title this time because we are talking a lot about nerding out and geeking out.
Yeah. I have a question about how to repair a pull in lace knitting. I recently finished a lace racerback tank for my daughter and she pulled it twice on her first wearing. Ugh. I tried to crochet a crochet hook to lightly pull the yarn back through the stitches and then blocking, but it still shows quite a bit. Is there a trick you know of? Maybe this could be a good video, as I realize this is more of a visual question. It might be hard to describe on what to do on a podcast. Thanks for everything you do, and know that it's greatly appreciated by all us knitting geeks. Megan from Middletown, New Jersey.
Hi, Megan. No, I think I can explain this. We're talking about a snag in lace where like a piece of yarn has been pulled and it's longer than everything else. And the first thing that I would try is... since you're going to have some stitches that are way tightened up around that snag, go ahead and take a thin wooden needle or one of those little bamboo pins that I always use and try to loosen up the stitches that have tightened in response to that snag. Try to loosen those back up and get that worked back into the fabric. And that would be the easiest way and would also be the way to make it look the best because you've just put it back to where it was before the snag happened. If that's not going to work and if it really isn't affecting the way the lace looks, I would just poke it inside the work and tack it down. Just like pretend, put it on the inside of the work, pretend like it never happened and tack it down. And if it's really long, there's something that I've done before. I actually have a video on repairing snags in lace that I'll link to in the show notes. Another thing that you can do if it's something that's, gosh, I don't think I've ever done this for a snag before, but I've done this where I've had an accidental yarn over or a drop stitch or something where I had a loop like this, pulled it to the back of the work, cut the loop in half, and then tied the two ends together and then trimmed it short. And then that little knot ends up not showing anywhere. It was just a way to get rid of that extra yarn without having to rip back or if the piece was finished, I can't remember. But those are a few options for fixing it. And I'll give a link to fixing snags in lace, or I can't remember the title of that video exactly. It might be fixing snags in lace, but it'll be in the show notes.
Okay.
Do you have input on this? Has this happened to you?
Actually, just a couple hours ago, I was looking at Blanky.
What?
Blanky, well-loved 11, 12-year-old Blanky is falling apart on the seams. And so I was just looking at all the little snags that need fixing. I think I'm just going to like crochet and edging on him.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Hi, Stacey. Love the show and listen to you and Casey faithfully while I walk my golden retriever, Buddy. This is my second question to the podcast. Thanks for answering the first one. I just finished a Comfort Zone cardigan and I bought beautiful leather embossed buttons ringed in silver fillery that I love. However, the buttons are heavy on a shank and droop down on the sweater. Not only is the look unattractive, but you can't even really see the buttons to admire them. Do you have any suggestions for better sewing on the buttons so that they enhance the sweater and don't detract? Looking forward to your answer. Best wishes, Xenia. Xenia? I'm more confused.
I think it's Xenia.
I think I'm more confused by the pronunciation given from Oxnard, right. California.
Okay, Xenia. Yes, I think I can maybe help you here a little bit. As beautiful as those buttons sound, I don't think they're the right buttons for the sweater. And I'm not sure that I've ever used a shank button and had it been a great fit on a cardigan. It might be good if you have if you used a really thick yarn, but it will only look good when the cardigan is buttoned. It's not going to look very good when you're wearing it open, because the shank buttons are just going to hang off the work. Buttons that sew directly onto the fabric with holes in the face of it, those are the kind of buttons that you usually want to use on a cardigan. And the only thing that I can think to maybe save this with these buttons is to actually poke the shank through the fabric and attach it that way so that they are flatter against the fabric and not hanging from the shank. That's the only way that I can think of using these buttons to make that work, because I can totally picture what you're saying about how they're hanging off the fabric. Casey, what do you think?
Can you explain what a shank button?
Oh, gosh. Means? Thank you, Casey. Thank you.
I don't know.
Okay, so, you know, like a regular button has holes in it and you sew it down straight through the button, right?
Uh-huh.
A shank button is going to be this beautiful thing. It can look like anything on the front. And then on the back, there's a little piece that sticks out with a hole in it. And so these are the kind of buttons that you see like on wool coats and stuff.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
And so the button actually sits away from the fabric, which allows for like heavy wool coat to be buttoned,
because it
gives you some extra space. So it actually sits away from the fabric. And then if it's a cardigan that you're wearing and you have these shank buttons, of course they're going to hang like bells off of the front of the cardigan, because if it's not buttoned, there's nothing to hold that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, you understand what a shank button is now?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you used buttons like that on knitted stuff?
No, I'm not. I don't have a lot of stuff I put buttons on. I was thinking of like, what are those buttons that are shaped like a post? They're like long and thin, or
a toggle button.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, those are different.
So I guess you can't sew another button behind that button with the shank.
Well, that's normally what you do with shank buttons to secure them, but it would still stick out from the fabric. That's why I'm thinking if she poked it through and then attached it, like maybe even like stuck something through the hole on the other side of the work, just so that the shank button is flat against the fabric.
Yeah.
But if she sewed it down really hard right there like that, it might actually be hard to button it closed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure that these are the greatest buttons. She might want to save those buttons for a sewing project.
Yeah.
Not a knitting project.
Yeah. I got some metal buttons and they are really heavy. And I thought, I wonder if that's going to be something. I bought them kind of like on a whim, like for stash that I had no plans for, but later I was like, these are probably heavy. I'm not sure that they could get used. So,
you know, I knit a Fair Isle sweater and I ordered these pewter buttons from Norway because I can't remember what the design was, but they just had this perfect design for this Fair Isle sweater, and they were hollow. They were little shank buttons and they were hollow and they worked perfectly on the sweater, but the shank was super short. I mean, it still is.
Mm-hmm.
I gave the sweater to my mom for Christmas. The shank was super short, and so they didn't really hang off the front. They just kind of tilted on the front, and they were hollow, so they didn't weigh very much, but that actually worked okay.
Yeah.
Okay, one more question.
All right. Hi, ladies. I was listening to your podcast tonight and thought of a thought sort of occurred to me. Stacy knits a lot, like all the time. It is both her job and her hobby, and I wondered, while some of it could certainly be personality, is it possible that Stacy is a process knitter because she has the luxury of being one? If she knits 8 hours a day or whatever, then if a project isn't going quite right, she knows she has more hours the next day to tweak it. There will always be time for more knitting, so why worry about it? Whereas the majority of knitters have much more limited time. For example, I have 3 kids and another on the way, so the time spent knitting matters more. If you only have a couple hours a week to knit, but if you really want to give someone a knitted gift by a certain deadline, suddenly things like swatching and frogging become a terrible burden. You just want to get it done because you're short on time. That said, in that case, you'd think project knitters, knowing we have limited time, would be less
Success. No, I can't either.
Susceptible to starditis. So who knows? But it's worth thinking about. Thanks for all you do. Haley from Los Alamos, New Mexico.
Hi, Haley. This is interesting. A different way of looking at it. The debate between process and project knitters. Process knitters being fine with a project taking forever, with ripping back to fix something, to no, there's nothing about getting through a project and getting it finished that's really important to a process knitter. I'm a process knitter. Project knitters are all about getting this project done. They also seem to be more susceptible to starditis, which is starting multiple projects. And we should link back to the Art Markman episode where he talks about process and project knitters, which is really good about getting into the whole psychology of all of this. But she's wondering that because I have so much time to knit during the day, maybe I'm a process knitter just because the pressure is less on me because there's so much more time to knit. Mm-hmm. And I can see why you might think that, but I'm going to say no, because the way she describes, like, you have to get this scarf finished for someone's birthday. Everything that I knit for work has a massive deadline because I have a video shoot coming up, right? And I have, you know, sponsors that I'm working with and stuff. So all this stuff has a huge deadline. And I would say that the stuff that I do for work is, I wouldn't say that I'm a project knitter, really. I mean, I have a schedule and I have to get through these things. But the projects that I knit for my own personal thing, I don't have any more time than anyone else to work on those. You know, I have a job that, you know, I work a lot of hours, and when I actually get to sit down and knit, it's not for very long. And I'm not a project knitter in either of those situations. Also, I don't think I knit as much as everyone thinks I do, because there's so much more to running a business than just the knitting part, right?
Right.
So what do you think, Casey?
I think if you've got three kids and one on the way, you need to just not worry about making knitted gifts for people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I think it's more of a personality thing that, like, you get excited by the thing, or there are people who are process knitters who are super busy and they just are like fine with taking one afghan and it taking them a whole year to knit.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Or having to rip back and re-knit the same thing that they just did. It doesn't have to be new and exciting. It's knitting, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And you're turning into a process knitter. We've talked about this before.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I have fewer projects. Well, I just dug through my half-finished projects bag looking for something today. But I think most right now, I just haven't been knitting. I was in kind of a knitting slump, so I don't know what I am. But I got out of it.
I saw that you knit a cabled hat with a big pom-pom. It's really cute.
Yeah. A friend of mine handed me a bag of yarn that her neighbor is like 90 something years old and losing her sight. And so she's like, I have this yarn. Do you know anybody who could use it? And she's like, I do. So she gave it to me.
Is it nice stuff?
It was okay. It was mostly leftovers.
Oh, okay.
And it was, you know, it was a lot of like craft store yarn that I don't typically use, but this one skein spoke to me. And so I knit a hat and I like, you know, that quick fix kind of knitting.
Yes, totally.
I cannot talk today. We'll kind of solve that knitting slump. And the project I've been working on, the sweater, I'm knitting a sweater for my son, and it's all stockinette through the middle. And so I finally got to separate for the sleeves, and I think that kind of got me a little excited.
Yeah, when you're knitting a top-down sweater and you separate for the sleeves, your rounds get so much shorter.
Well, this is bottom-up, so...
Okay.
I've done all the body, and that long slog through the body of stockinette was like, ugh.
See, and that sounds like a dream to me. Wow.
I know.
Look at all this stockinette I get to knit. Yay. Casey, that's all we have time for this week. So we can give you some time to find your words again, because me too. If people want to find you online.
My website is kcknits.com. That's the letter K and the letter C.
Very good. And if you want to find me online, there is the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel or verypink.com. So that is it for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.